It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 29 degrees under mostly fair skies. Out at the airport, they have a full 10 miles of visibility. And northwest winds steady at 12, gusting to 22. The Weather Service is calling for this clearing of skies to continue with a high near 29 today. We're there. Northwest winds to 15. Clear skies overnight with a low of 21. Northwest winds to 15 tonight and tomorrow. And look for sunny skies tomorrow. Clear skies overnight Wednesday night and sunny skies on Thursday too. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Aleutic Museum is building a database of repatriation efforts. Kodiak's tanner crab season is closed. And a vessel capsized offshore from Cape Chiniac on Sunday. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from Bedford, New Hampshire, I'm Lakshmi Singh. It is primary day in the Granite State. Two candidates left standing. Former President Donald Trump is competing here, fresh from a landslide win in the Iowa caucuses. And he has one rival left in the race for the GOP presidential nomination, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. The outcome of this primary widely seen as make or break for Haley's campaign. We're definitely seeing heavy turnout inside this Bedford School Gymnasium turn polling site, and of course hearing the periodic sound of a party horn when someone's voted for the first time. Also heavy turnout across the state. NPR's Ashley Lopez has been covering this race and joins us now. Hello, Ashley.
Hey there.
In terms of turnout today, what's something you're on the lookout for?
Well, I'm going to be paying most attention to independent voters. Primary elections are usually dominated by base party voters, so like your most faithful Republican and Democratic voters. But because New Hampshire opens its primary elections to independent voters, I think those voters are going to be an important voting block to watch. Importantly, they're roughly 40% of the overall electorate in the state. Today, I've spoken to a lot of moderate and left-leaning voters who won't vote Republican in November, but they're backing Nikki Haley today, mostly because, of course, they don't like Trump. And these voters could be key for Nikki Haley.
A lot has been made of how important this presidential contest is for Haley's campaign in particular. How vital do you think it is for her to do well tonight?
Well, I don't think that's been overstated. I'll say that. Doing well here is essential for the Haley campaign. She has spent a lot of time and money here, and the demographics are probably the most favorable to her here than any other early state. So if she wants to prove that she can keep up this two-person race, this is her chance to do that. And she said as much today that she intends to stay in this race, whatever today's outcome.
Okay, thanks, Ashley. That's NPR's Ashley Lopez joining me in this gymnasium in Bedford, New Hampshire. Independent voters make up more than 40% of the New Hampshire electorate, as Ashley said. Nikki Haley's depending on them to turn out today. Retired voter Marie Mulroy, an independent, says she's backing Haley because the White House is due for a change from the last 8 years.
She's able to bring that kind of breath of fresh air right now to politics, where she can talk, you know, to both sides of the issue and kind of start to build some consensus and is not a flamethrower.
That's Marie Mulroy, an independent. Well, instead of focusing on New Hampshire, President Biden is in Northern Virginia. He and Vice President Kamala Harris are headlining an abortion rights rally in Manassas that's set to get underway later this hour. First Lady Jill Biden and Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff will also be there in what amounts to the first appearance of all four together for the 2024 campaign. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. While efforts to repatriate Alaska Native remains have been ongoing, keeping track of those remains has been difficult. But now the Aleutic Museum in Kodiak is building a database of repatriation efforts for the archipelago's communities. KMXT's Brian Benoit reports tribes will be able to track repatriation progress online in about 2 years.
Amanda Lancaster is the Aleutic Museum's curator of collections. She says the $100,000 grant comes from the National Park Service's Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act.
One of the major problems with NAGPRA is that there is not like a central database that shows what has been repatriated, what has been claimed. And so oftentimes tribes will spend time pursuing these repatriations, and then it turns out that set of ancestral remains was returned and reburied 20 years ago.
The new grant now gives the Aleutic Museum federal funds to create a central database that tracks repatriation progress. The money is going to be split for travel to villages to meet with tribal representatives and for staff to dedicate their time towards the project. Lancaster says the museum will also use funds to contract outside software developers to create the system.
Part of that money is earmarked for them to work on that database for us, to create a login system so that tribes can actually access the database themselves.
This is just the latest step in bringing Aleutic and Sugpiak remains back to the archipelago. The Kodiak Aleutic Sugpiak Repatriation Commission and museum staff have been working to repatriate several human remains since 2007. Lancaster says the commission last met in 2022 after the museum got a similar grant that would fund more research to find additional remains.
We identified 12 collecting institutions in the U.S. that had the remains of at least 168 Aleutic ancestors, and those are just the ones we know about.
The database is expected to be completed in the next 2 years and will only be accessible to Kodiak's 10 federally recognized tribes. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
The southeast section of Kodiak's Tanner Crab fishery closed at 6 p.m. yesterday evening, marking the end of this year's commercial fishing season. Nearly 3.5 million pounds of Tanner crabs have been caught in the Kodiak district and along the Alaska Peninsula about a week after the 2024 fishery opened. That is down from last year's harvest of over 7 million pounds. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Nat Nichols is the area manager for commercial groundfish and shellfish fisheries in the Kodiak area. He says this year's Tanner crab season lasted just a bit longer than average.
Well, there was certainly a factor this year, more so than last year. We definitely saw a decrease in effort on a few days due to weather. So, yeah, I would say that it's fair to say that it extended the season, not by a lot, but maybe by a day or so.
Last year's Tanner crab season lasted about a week as well, although the crab fleet started 2 weeks late after standing down in protest of low prices from local processors. According to Nichols, 135 boats registered to fish for Tanner crabs this season, although not every boat ended up participating. 110 signed up to fish the east side, 20 for the southeast, and 5 for the southwest. Fishers use technology such as satellite internet, inReach devices, and WhatsApp messaging platforms to stay in contact with Fish and Game on a daily basis while crabbing.
It takes some effort. We have a number of staff that come in and take reports, but yeah, lots of texting. So we've had excellent reporting from the fleet. This year we had several days where we had 100%, so we were talking to every single boat.
The final harvest amount and number of boats who participated will be released by the department in the coming days. A fishing vessel capsized offshore from Cape Chiniac on Sunday, requiring the Coast Guard to send a rescue crew. No fatalities were reported. Weather conditions at the time included 30-knot winds and 8-foot seas. According to a Coast Guard statement, the Alaska Rose, a 46-foot fishing vessel, reported that they were taking on water 2 miles northeast of Chiniac around 4:30 p.m. Sunday. An MH-60 Jayhawk helicopter from Air Station Kodiak was on scene 30 minutes later and hoisted one person from the overturned Alaska Rose. 3 other crew members from the capsized fishing vessel were rescued from the water by a nearby boat, the Kailia. An exhibit at the Anchorage Museum spotlighting the history of Filipino Americans in Alaska was defaced with a crude sticker last week. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
MANA, The History We Inherit, is an oral history exhibit that features portraits and biographies of interview subjects, as well as numerous collages featuring photo submissions from community members. Shane Nuesca, one of the creators of MANA, says one of the exhibit's collage contributors noticed Thursday someone had tampered with it.
They noticed right away that there was something different about the display of their late family member's collage. They noticed that it was a sticker. It was a sticker of political and sexual nature.
Nuesca says the community member texted the MANA creative team about the sticker and then told museum officials. She says the MANA team was only told about the incident at noon the next day. In a statement, Anchorage Museum spokeswoman Janet Asaro said there were similar stickers placed on museum furniture, walls, and a large map of Alaska. She said the stickers were removed and did not cause permanent damage. In her statement, Asaro also said that, like other public buildings, the museum has been a victim of similar vandalism in the past. She said, quote, "We do take incidents like these very seriously and remain committed to the protection and integrity of the cultural installations and artworks in our care." But the MANA team is criticizing how well the museum protected its exhibit. Joshua Brandstetter is another creative lead for the project. He says in putting MANA together, the team visited communities from Adak to Juneau and Fairbanks, seeking out contributions to highlight more than 200 years of Filipino history in the state.
We're going to make sure this history is preserved. Your family members, your photos, your items, they're safe with us. We made them that promise. And for us to entrust that to the museum, there was an expectation that this would be treated the same as a pink bear that has a security guard on it.
Brandstetter also says he was disappointed the museum went ahead with removing the stickers without notifying the MANA exhibit's creators.
It feels like we weren't kept in the loop when something that could have damaged the exhibit happened, and then also for it to be tampered after the fact, and for us not to be able to review that, to be able to see, okay, everything is fine.
Ultimately, the MANA team says they hope all exhibits are given equal respect, transparency, and protection from the museum, especially those with strong cultural connections. Tasha Elizarde, another member of the MANA team, says the contributor who reported the sticker regularly visited the exhibit to pay respects to their family member.
This is kind of like the equivalent of going to like the cemetery to visit your grandparent who had passed away and very, very recently, and then seeing that someone had messed with the tombstone.
MANA, The History We Inherit, is set to wrap up its run at the Anchorage Museum on January 28th. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
A domestic violence organization in Anchorage is training people in the beauty industry to recognize signs of domestic abuse and offer support. Anchorage Alliance for Violence Prevention is holding the online training this month. It's for barber and salon workers, makeup artists, tattoo artists, and massage therapists statewide. Erin Workman is leading the training. She says people in the beauty and body work industries have a unique opportunity to spot signs of abuse.
They work in kind of an intimate situation with people. There tends to be a lot of time to talk and to have conversations. They also see people's body, so they're able to recognize signs, physical signs on them, such as missing hair or bruising or cuts and scratches.
And she says sometimes a trip to the salon or tattoo parlor may be the only time someone in an abusive relationship can talk privately.
A lot of times with domestic violence, people are isolated from family and friends and other areas of support. And so this is a time where they might actually be able to speak privately with someone and get some support from somebody.
Some states require salon workers to complete training on spotting signs of abuse. This training will focus on identifying signs of emotional and physical abuse, how to talk with people about abuse safely, and how to direct people to resources.
It's really critical to empower a victim, that it's their voice that matters, that they have choices. So even if somebody declines getting services, that you can still say, well, I know somebody who might be able to help, so if you need any assistance, I'm always here for you to talk to.
She likens that kind of support to an open door someone can walk through when they are ready for change. The training, called Cut It Out, is free and will be held online January 28th. People can register by contacting the Anchorage Alliance for Violence Prevention Anyone experiencing domestic violence can get help by calling 800-799-7233. Less than a week after Juneau got buried under nearly 30 inches of snow, a second storm is triggering school closures, clogging roads, and running snowplow drivers ragged. KTOO's Clarice Larson and Anna Canny chatted with some of the people responsible for dealing with all that snow.
As snow kept piling up in Juneau on Monday, 16 inches since Saturday night, Public Works Director Denise Kosh says keeping up is an all-hands-on-deck situation.
CBJ streets crews are out doing everything they can. Our water utility is out doing everything they can to do things like try and keep fire hydrants clear and those sorts of things.
The Juneau School District shifted to remote learning Monday, and CBJ offices were closed due to the snow. Kosh says the city is fully staffed with plow drivers and contracted help, and drivers have been working night and day. She says two city loaders are out of commission, but that's been the only equipment hiccup so far. Independent plow drivers have also been working long hours to clear private driveways and roads. Brian Klassmeyer says he's been plowing his routes in the valley twice a day. With constant snow and fluctuating temperatures, he says it's hard to keep up.
When it's been snowing for several hours and then the temperature changes and now it's 30 degrees and it's starting to get wet, then it's really difficult to remove. And then if it freezes the next night, especially if you have a berm, it's almost impossible to remove. You can break your plow.
Debbie Driscoll with AELNP says there have been no reported power outages as of Monday afternoon.
We're, knock on wood, not really seeing anything right now. It's cold, so trees tend to stay in place when it's, really cold and the ground is frozen.
She says the weather warming in the coming days could bring some outages. Capital City Fire Rescue Assistant Chief Sam Russell says the department has not had any reports of roof cave-ins as of Monday morning. Kosh says how much weight a roof can handle depends on factors like pitch, age, and location.
People ask these questions about, whether or not they should shovel their roof. And it's not, unfortunately, it's not one-size-fits-all sort of answer.
The city does offer guidance on its website to help residents assess the potential for roofs to collapse. Meanwhile, Juneau Harbormaster Matt Cresswell says there have been no reports of boats sinking yet, but he strongly encourages boat owners to go shovel their boats if they can get to the harbor safely.
At this rate, the snow is going to keep coming, and it's getting heavier and heavier, and we're starting to be really concerned.
Last week at Aurora Harbor, three boats sank under the weight of the snow. Three more were saved just in time. Capital Transit has shifted to winter routes until midnight. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
The 35th annual Anchorage Folk Festival got underway this past weekend, with three nights of performances and more to come next weekend. There's no charge to come and listen. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride reports, singers and songwriters have been waiting all year to share their music with the community.
The Anchorage Folk Festival started out as a way to come in from the cold and sit around the communal hearth of the Wendy Williamson Auditorium. That's Chelsea Berry warming up the crowd. She grew up in Alaska but now lives in Maine. She was a little kid when she first sang at this festival. Now she performs all over the country.
A star is always there.
Over the course of 2 weeks, more than 100 groups will take to the stage, most of them from the community, sharing what they do to brighten the dark days of winter. This is the first folk festival for the Shake City String Band, a string quartet that was born during the pandemic.
We were playing in various ways before then, but 2020, when everything closed down, we got together and started doing this once a week, twice a week.
Kyle Lindsay is the leader of the group, made up of a violin, viola, cello, bass, along with a hammer dulcimer, and thrown in for good measure, various other folk instruments and vocals.
Go in the head, it's
Katie Waska, who plays the violin, says all of the musicians are classically trained.
I like to do it all. A lot of us play in the Anchorage Symphony, so we love playing classical, but also like to get rowdy, play a little fiddle music.
With a new act roughly every 15 minutes, you can expect a lot of genre hopping, from mandolin orchestras to accordion bands to bluegrass and even some boogie blues. There's bound to be something for everyone. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
United Airlines may not buy Boeing's next plane. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. United CEO Scott Kirby is considering alternatives to Boeing's next model, the 737 MAX 10. This is in response to the grounding of MAX 9 jets after a panel blew out during an Alaska Airlines flight. Kirby told CNBC that Boeing needs to do more to regain trust. Deadly crashes in 2018 and 19 temporarily grounded MAX planes, and the company has since had a series of manufacturing problems. Johnson & Johnson has agreed to pay $700 million to settle a multi-state investigation into its marketing of talcum-based powder. It previously offered $9 billion to resolve tens of thousands of lawsuits claiming the powder contained asbestos. Johnson & Johnson denies wrongdoing. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 23rd day of December, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 9:29. It will set again at 5:13. That will give us 7 hours and 44 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 54 seconds. Compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 46 degrees set in 1937, and our record low was minus 4 set in 1947. Currently 29 degrees, fair skies, northwest winds at 12 miles per hour at the airport right now with gusts to 22, and 10 miles of visibility. And they are calling for clear skies for the rest of the day, northwest winds to 15, clear skies overnight, sunny skies tomorrow, clear skies for Wednesday night, and sunny skies for Thursday too, with northwest winds throughout the period up to about 15 or so. For Thursday night, partly cloudy, north winds to 20, and for Friday, a 30% chance of snow. We just had a high tide here on the east side. That happened at 12:03 p.m., and was 9.4 feet. Our next low tide will be at 7:13 this evening and be minus 5/10, followed by a high tide at 1:53 a.m. of 7 feet. Over on the west side, you are just about to have a high tide at 12:37 p.m. That will be a 14-foot tide in Larson Bay, followed by a low tide at 7:38 p.m. of minus 1.1 feet, and your middle-of-the-night high tide will be at 2:08 a.m. and be 11.8 feet. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory for today with north winds to 25 knots except north 30 north of Dangerous Cape and seas to 8 feet. North 20 tonight with 6-foot seas and northwest 20 tomorrow with seas at 6 feet. Over in the Shelikof, small craft advisory today, northeast 30 becoming north 20 in the afternoon with 8-foot seas, coming down to 5 feet this afternoon. But look for freezing spray today in the Shelikof. Also tonight and tomorrow, west winds of 20 knots tonight, 4-foot seas with freezing spray, and north winds to 20 knots tomorrow with 5-foot seas and freezing spray. Meetings coming up in the Kodiak Island Borough include today's meeting of the Solid Waste Contract Committee. They'll be meeting in just a few minutes at 1 p.m. in the Borough Conference Room. Tonight, the Fire Protection Area No. 1 will be having their regular board meeting in the Bayside Fire Hall. That's happening at 6 p.m. And on Thursday, the Assembly will be having its work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. Also tonight, the Kodiak City Council will be having a work session. That's happening at the Library Multipurpose Room. You can find the packet and meeting agenda at the City of Kodiak website. And they will be having their regular meeting on Thursday, also in the Library's Multipurpose Room. That meeting will be broadcast live here on KMXT. Here's a message from the City of Kodiak. Due to the upcoming snow, the Public Works Department will plow and grade roads at varying times in varying places. Please remove all vehicles from the roadside and trash bins from the sidewalk. Don't shovel snow into the middle of the street, please, after the plowing has occurred. Please do not park at or block the Pillar Mountain Gate. Use designated parking areas. After plowing, snow will be bermed in the center lane, then removed as equipment and manpower allow. So please use caution while driving, maintaining 50 feet of clearance from all the equipment, and when possible, it's advised to use an alternative route if you encounter snow removal equipment. If you have any questions, contact Maintenance Supervisor Steve Wilson at 907-486-8060. Things happening at the library include this month's Traveler's Destination. That features Roy and Crystal Thomas's journey to Tanzania and Mount Kilimanjaro. Come learn about their hikes and view their images of beautiful vistas. That's happening Wednesday, tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. It's open for everyone. Also on Wednesday at 3:30 p.m., the famous Lego Club. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Thursdays at 10:30 a.m. is the preschool story time. That's for kids ages 3 to 6. And Fridays at 10:30 a.m., the library hosts its Lap Sit story time for babies up to 3 years old. Join in the genre reading challenge that runs through February. Try reading from different genres and record your reading on a bingo card at kodiak.beanstack.org, and you can earn prizes and learn something new. For more information, ask for help at the front desk of the library. And you can also give the library a call at 907-486-8686. The Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District is calling all Kodiak agricultural enthusiasts, including chicken farmers, ranchers, growers, gardeners, everybody. They are going to have a talk about the challenges of agriculture in Kodiak and the solutions people have developed. They'll also be discussing possible future workshops that might be helpful. That's all happening at the Kodiak Public Library on Thursday, 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m., Thursday, February 1st. And they also will have brief introductions to programs that are already available to assist agriculture producers here in Kodiak. Again, that's Thursday, February 1st, 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. And entertainment is on its way. The KMS Drama Club is presenting The Outsiders, adapted by Christopher Sergill from the book by S.E. Hinton. That's happening Friday and Saturday, February 2nd and 3rd at 7 p.m. in the Drama Pod of the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Only $3 for students and seniors and $5 for adults. Again, that's next Friday and Saturday, 2nd and 3rd, 7 p.m. Caregivers of Kodiak's youngest community members are invited to the Diaper Distribution Center for free diapers and wipes this Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. Located at 1910 East Razanoff, the Diaper Distribution Center is a ministry of the Frontier Southern Baptist Church. Diapers are available in all sizes on a first-come, first-served basis while supplies last. Size swaps are welcome. Bring your outgrown diapers in good condition and trade them in for your baby's current size. And again, the next distribution day is this Friday, January 26th, 4 to 7 p.m. at 1910 East Razanoff Drive. And today's Talk of the Rock will be a classic rebroadcast from 2018. Join KMXT's Maggie Wall as she speaks with experts on tsunami preparedness and the creation of the tsunami inundation zone here in Kodiak. So stay tuned for that.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.